Well, we're going to have a wonderful call today. This call could change your life. And not only will we send you a copy of it, but we'll send you all the notes as well so that you'll have something to go. So you don't have to take a lot of notes. You can just concentrate. But one thing you do when we start officially is jot down ideas that come to you about your own personal situation. Because there'll be a lot of zappers in here, just sort of thought starters, and you think, ooh, that's something I could do, should do. Those are the only notes that you make, or things that are personal to you, and everything else we'll send to you. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay, well, then let us begin. 5, 4, 3, 2. Now, at the end of this call, I'm going to give you a link that you can go to get more information on changing your financial life forever. It's a link where you can learn the 12 steps to financial freedom, to becoming a millionaire. Hang in with us, and we'll give you all that information later on. So let us begin. Now, we're going through a very interesting financial situation today. It's a time of fear. It's a time of greed. It's a time of panic. It's a time of economic collapse. But surprise, surprise, we have been through this before. There have been financial collapses and panics that have gone on for the last 100, 150 years. And I remember back in 1907, there was a collapse like this, a financial panic. Everybody was running around. The government was collapsing. The stock market was collapsing. And J.P. Morgan brought together several of his biggest friends, financiers, and they got together to work it all out. And J.P. Morgan personally wrote a check for $500 million, which in 1907 was a lot, to basically stabilize the financial markets. And he was asked by the reporters, Mr. Morgan, what's the market going to do? And he said, I've given it considerable thought. And he said, I can tell you with great confidence that the market will fluctuate. That the market will fluctuate. Now, it's important to understand this because our lives, our fortunes will fluctuate. The markets will fluctuate. It's the nature of a free economy that it goes from boom to bust, that you have growth and recessions and so on. The market will fluctuate, just as your fortunes in life will fluctuate. So take that into consideration. Now, I was giving a talk on a stage with an economist who's very popular. He's booked to speak for corporations and organizations. And I asked him, I said, how do you become successful as an economist? Because it's kind of a dry subject. He said, well, it's pretty easy. He said, you keep current with what's going on. And then you always predict growth in America. You always predict growth. He said, because 80% of American economic history has been growth. So if you predict growth, you'll end up being right most of the time. And even if the economy goes sideways or goes down, keep predicting growth with some confidence, and the economy will come back up again. And everybody will say, boy, that guy's a bright guy. So in your life, always predict growth for yourself. And in the economy, always predict growth. Remember, in a dynamic economy where people want to improve their lives and get ahead and have and buy and own more things, people will find a way. Hundreds of thousands of millions of people will find a way. And the economy, just as coming out of the winter, it goes into the spring and summer. We're going through a winter today. It'll go into the summer. And your job is to be prepared to reap an abundant harvest. Now, recessions last about 6 to 16 months. This is the history of recessions for 150 years. The free market readjusts the value and the prices of homes and stocks like a store that has a clearance sale. For example, the prices are adjusted down to clear the stock, and business gets back to normal at the new, more realistic prices. Now, here's a ratio for you. It's called 15 to 1. Now, a stock usually trades at about 15 to 1. If you look at 100 years of stock market averages, there's a straight line that says that a stock will be priced at 15 times its earnings. It's called the price-earnings ratio. So whenever stocks start to get up to 20, 30, 40, 50, during the dot-coms, they would get up to 300 or 400 times non-existent earnings, you know that there's going to be a correction. And there's a rule that says water seeks its own level. If you take a bucket of water and you shake it up and then leave it for a couple of seconds, it seeks its own level. It stabilizes at a certain level. If you take the market and you shake it up and everything, it will come back to its own level. It never changes. Now, here's the deal with homes. A home is worth 15 times its annual rental. If you can rent a home for $1,000 a month, that's $12,000 a year. 15 times $12,000 a year is, what does that work out to? $180,000 or something like that. In other words, it seeks its own level. So when homes go beyond 15 times their annual rental rate, it means that they are off the trend line. and that they will seek their own level. So keep those in mind. Now, the subprime mortgage meltdown that we're dealing with today was triggered by government regulations. It is not a failure of the free market. It is interference in the free market. Government regulations called the Community Reinvestment Act, passed by Jimmy Carter in 1977, forced banks to make what are called ninja loans. You've heard of a ninja loan? A ninja loan is no interest, no income, no assets, no job, no credit rating, called a ninja loan. And these loans were so to spread the wealth. Everybody should have a chance to have their own house, even if they have no money, no credit rating, no job or anything else. And people were even allowed to include their welfare stamps as part of their income in applying for a mortgage where there was no down payment. And what happened was, if they're going to give these loans to people who have no assets or no income, no anything else, why not give these assets or these loans to other people? So other people started to say, hey, what about me? And so they said, well, you can have them too. I mean, you've actually got a job. And then the government, which forced the banks to make these loans, and under the threat of fines and regulations, then said, well, what are we going to do with the loans? Well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, government-backed entities, well, they'll buy all these loans. They'll buy all these mortgages. So people say, I can get a high return on a mortgage or a package of mortgages called securitized mortgages, and no risk because the government backs them. And what it is, it set off a feeding frenzy. Instead of investing in a company or a business that has fluctuations and good markets and bad markets, you could buy a package of these loans and you could have a steady return. You could pay your lenders 3 to 5%. You could buy these packages that paid 6 to 7. You could make the spread. In between, you could add on fees. And what happened was it got completely out of control. And finally, everybody in the world was going after these massive billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions of loans, and they were leveraging. You know, Lehman Brothers, you heard, went broke. Lehman Brothers was leveraged 40 times. That means for every dollar of capital they had $40 loaned out. And what happened when the value started to come down, the leverage collapsed. And the whole 138-year-old company went bankrupt in a matter of a few weeks. So the current situation is the result. And in retrospect, as they say, hindsight is 20/20. In retrospect, everybody says, wow, we should never have done that. That was crazy. And then, of course, the next thing that happens, and be aware of this, is called the witch hunt. Peter Drucker talked about this. First you have the financial boom, then you have the financial collapse, then you have the witch hunt. And so now we're in the witch hunt stage where people say, who did it? Who's to be blamed? Who's going to be frog marched out of their offices and so on? But this has little to do with you and I. One of the great rules for success is never get upset about something you can't do anything about. Keep your mind focused on what you can. Now, the four most profound words in human history, always true, under all circumstances, are these: this too shall pass. So remember, this too shall pass. This is something that will pass, and don't get excited. Ken Fisher, my friend, who's a billionaire investment expert, has $45 billion under his investment company, asked this question: how do you make money in the stock market? And the answer is, you buy when stocks are low and sell when they are high. Pretty simple. However, what is it that most people do? Most people buy when stocks are high and then sell, bail out, go into panic when stocks become low. So don't let that happen to you. It's the same in real estate, especially today with so many foreclosed homes for sale. Remember, when buying a foreclosed home, just like buying a stock, is you are buying a piece of that neighborhood. You have to be thoughtful, even if it is at a low price. What you have to do is you have to do your homework, do your research, and make sure that you can rent it out for at least 15 times the amount that you pay for it. If you can't do that, no matter how much it's come down in value, it's not a good investment. And we'll talk about real estate in a couple of minutes. Now, the starting point of dealing with any financial turbulence is this: stay calm. Stay calm. People become very emotional about money, especially about losing money. And so they become very distraught. And some people today are getting into serious physical and mental problems over money. So I learned from a good friend of mine many years ago, whenever you start to get upset about money, just keep saying to yourself, it's only money. It's only money. And this too shall pass. And stay calm. And when you say, this too shall pass, and you stay calm, it enables you to think clearly. It enables you to make better decisions. And another thing about top people is they think long term. They don't think, oh my God, I'm losing all this money or all these problems today. Well, Remember, you're going to be around for 10, 20, 50 years. So think long term and realize this too shall pass. The economy will come back. Things will get better. So in keeping calm, number one is get the facts. Get the facts. Not the presumed facts or the assumed facts or the hoped-for facts, but be very, very judicious and get the facts. Ask questions. Don't overreact. Find out what's truly going on. Remember, much of what is being said is confused and inaccurate and incomplete. So just be calm and say, where does this information come from? How can we check it? How can we corroborate it? Think on paper. Do an exact analysis of your current situation. If you want to become stable today and wealthy tomorrow, start asking questions. How much do you have today? And take a piece of paper and work out, if you had to sell everything and move away, how much would you actually have today? Second is, how much do you earn? What are your exact earnings after taxes, deductions, expenses, and so on? How much are you bringing in? And how much do you owe? This is very important. A lot of people don't know these questions, by the way. Especially they don't want to face the fact that I owe all this money. The average American today is paying 20% of their income in payments on debt. 20% of their income goes to interest payments, minimum payments, and so on. So how much do you owe? Write it down. Make a list. And then how much are your monthly expenses? What does it cost you to live today? And as soon as you do that, you'll find that the average American is living on about 110% of what they earn after taxes. And no wonder they're living and kiting on credit cards and loans and home equity loans and so on, because there's a law called Stein's Law in economics that says whatever can't go on won't. Let me repeat that. Whatever can't go on won't. You cannot live beyond your income forever. At a certain point, it won't go on. At a certain point, it'll all come to a halt. And the longer it takes to come to a halt, the worse it will be, as we can see from the world financial situation today. And so what could you do just to cut back or to save money immediately? You know, my friend David Bach talks about the latte factor, says if you just stop going to Starbucks, which, of course, a lot of people have done, right? That's why they're closing 600 stores, stop going to Starbucks every single day and spending $5, that's $25 a week. If you go twice, that's $50 a week. So you start looking at where you could start to cut back. And then you take that money, and you're paying 21 to 28% interest on your credit cards. Start paying down your credit cards, and pretty soon your whole financial life starts to change like a great ship in the ocean. And then finally, here's a rule from Jack Welch in Business Week last month. He said, whatever steps you would take under the worst possible circumstances, take them now. He said, change before you have to. Project down the road and say, what if things got worse than they are today? What if my line of credit was cut off? What if my credit card rates went to 28%? What if I lost my job? What would I do to survive? And human beings will always find a way to survive. Whatever you would do, start doing it now. Start making preparations now. You know, we say that denial is not a river in Egypt. And there's an enormous amount of denial out there. People are practicing denial. So make a written financial plan to get your finances under control. This is really important. Don't ignore it. Don't watch television. Sit down and begin to put together a financial plan to get your finances under control and resolve to get out of debt and stay out of debt. We've been through the period, and we know that debt is a very stressful thing to have. So make a decision. By gum, I'm going to get out of debt. Don't say, I wish I could, and I wish I'll try, and so on. No. Make a decision to do it, and then make a plan. And then become proactive, to become financially independent in the years ahead. Remember the old saying, nothing is as good as it sounds, nothing is as bad as it sounds. So here's the good news. With 5% of the world's population and 5% of the world's landmass, the United States produces 30% of the world's gross national product and contains 50% of the world's wealth. In other words, this is the wealthiest single place in the history of man on earth. The United States has and will continue to create more millionaires, more multimillionaires, more billionaires and multibillionaires in the last few decades than all the rest of the world put together, and it's done this throughout its history. In 1900, there were 5,000 millionaires in the United States. And by the way, your goal should be at least to become a self-made millionaire. There's 10,000 of them today. So most of them were self-made in the year 5000. By the year 2000, there were 5 million millionaires in the United States, an increase of 1,000 times. Now, even with inflation, that's a big increase in wealth. Do you know that 50% of America's wealth has been created in the last 25 years? If you travel around America and you look at all the beautiful hotels and the airports and the freeways and the sports stadiums, they've all been built in the last 25 years. This is the greatest period of affluence in human history. And, of course, we're going through a hiccup now, which we will by and by get through. Now, in 2004, the number of millionaires in the U.S. jumped by more than 2 million, an increase of 33%. The largest expansion of personal wealth in the history of man on Earth, and the last record just before the subprime collapse was 9.8 million millionaires in the United States, almost all of whom were self-made. And so those people will come back. The market will fluctuate. Now, the United States today has a $13 trillion economy that's growing by approximately $500 billion per year. Even though we are in a slow period, the economy continues to expand in about 90% of areas. I mean, some companies like Apple and Microsoft and Walmart are reporting record profits. The average income in the U.S. is $42,000. It's the highest in the world, and it continues to grow. Now, according to the OECD of Paris, that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the United States is the most entrepreneurial country in the world. More than 2 million new businesses are formed each year in the U.S. It's estimated that there are 35 million businesses in the U.S. 35 million businesses. That's about one for every nine people. Now, some of them are small. Some people have more than one business. But we have more businesses, and it's easier to start and build a business here than anywhere else in the world. And businesses are the primary source of wealth. So more people are making more money in more different ways than ever before. More people will become financially independent, if not self-made millionaires, in the next few years than in the last 200 years. And your job is to be one of them. So in this teleseminar, you're going to learn some of the most important of all principles of wealth creation. Now, I came from a poor family. I didn't know any of this when I started off. And my family struggled with money all my life. Our favorite song at home was, "We Can't Afford It, We Can't Afford It, We Can't Afford It." It was our family theme song. I didn't graduate from high school. After I left high school, I worked at laboring jobs for several years, washing dishes, stacking lumber, carrying construction materials on building sites, digging wells. I worked on the production line in a factory. I worked on farms and ranches, and I even worked as a galley boy on a freighter in the North Atlantic. In my early 20s, I began asking, why is it that some people are more successful than others? Why is it that some people enjoy all the rewards in life and others have to struggle? You know, somebody told me that the top 20% of people make 80% of the money. So my question was, well, what is it that they do differently from the bottom 80%? And I began asking, why is it that some people make so much money and others don't? Everybody starts off at the same starting line, by the way, with pretty much the same intelligence and pretty much the same opportunities and pretty much the same abilities. And then some people surge far, far ahead of the others. And what is the reason for that? And what I find is it's not a matter of talent or ability or intelligence or background. It's really a matter of the things that they do and the things that they know. Perhaps the biggest breakthrough for me was the discovery of the self-concept. I learned that you always perform on the outside based on the way you think about yourself on the inside. Today, I still am amazed at this concept. There's a one-to-one relationship between the way you see yourself on the inside and the way you perform on the outside. As you change your self-concept, your idea of yourself, your external performance and results change as well. Wow! In short, we say, you become what you think about most of the time. So what do self-made millionaires think about? Now, I've worked with Tom Stanley and Bill Danko, the people who wrote The Millionaire Next Door, and these people have interviewed for 25 years thousands and thousands of self-made millionaires to find out what they think about most of the time. And most self-made millionaires seem to have certain qualities in common. And remember, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? What happens is the way you think comes first, and what you achieve comes second. So as you change your thinking, you begin to change the direction of your life. Now, how do self-made millionaires think? First of all, they think long-term, as I said before. They make the efforts and sacrifices in the present. In other words, they pay off their bills, they get out of debt, they live within their means. They make these sacrifices in order to achieve financial independence 10 and 20 years in the future. There's 75 years of research on this subject. If successful people think long-term, they make decisions in the present to assure that they enjoy a long-term future. Unsuccessful people want to have fun, fun, fun till their daddy takes their T-bird away. They want to spend it all and go out and have a good time and leave a good-looking corpse and all that sort of thing, but not successful people. So the second characteristic of self-made millionaires is they practice frugality, frugality, frugality in their financial lives during their prime earning years so that they can achieve financial independence as early as possible. In other words, they think about achieving financial independence most of the time. They say, look, if I can buy used cars, used furniture, smaller house, we'll do everything possible to save money. I remember once I worked for a man, great experience. He started with nothing, and when he died, he was worth $800 million, almost a billion. And I set up and ran a division of his company, and one day I was reporting on the activities, and I showed him where I had been able to save 15 cents on the purchase of a particular component that we used a lot of, 15 cents per component. And he fastened in on that, almost like a laser beam. He said, that's very good, he said. That's very good. If we have several thousand of these a year times 15 cents, that's additional profit. That goes straight to the bottom line, doesn't it? This man was worth $800 million. He ran 200 companies. He had his own private jet that basically sat and waited for him, and he flew it about twice a month. And yet his attitude was saving 15%, 15 cents per component was a significant thing. And he was very pleased with me, almost like a father being pleased with a child, that I had actually found a way to save this. And I realized at that time, that's why this man is wealthy. It's because he's so thoughtful about small expenses. He really respects them. So we say that money goes where it is welcome and stays where it is appreciated. It goes where it is welcome and stays where it is appreciated. So self-made millionaires, number three, is they develop the habit of enjoying the process of saving and accumulating rather than spending and throwing it around. So here's a critical thing to change your self-concept. From now on, say to yourself, I like to save money. I like to be debt-free. I like to have money in the bank. And if you keep saying that to yourself, you'll actually create a negative force field of energy. So when you're confronted with an unnecessary expense, you'll say, no, I like to be financially independent. And if I spend my money on that, that will move me away from financial independence. You'll start to develop a mindset of, I like to save money. I like to have money in the bank. And when you start to think like that, you'll start to think like the top people and the wealthiest people in our society and all self-made millionaires. Now, a key measure of how well you are doing is what is called your survival rate. Now, this is the number of months and years that you could support your current lifestyle if you never worked again. Remember I asked you before, what is your monthly budget? Well, your survival rate is how long you could survive at that rate without having to work. And your goal should be to get your survival rate up to 20 years. Now, you'll probably never stop working, but you want to have the choice. And to have the choice, the experts say you should have 20 years of expenses put aside. So let's take what you do is you determine how much you need to live on each month and multiply that number by 240. Now, 240 equals 20 years times 12 months. So let's say you need $5,000 per month to live comfortably without working. You multiply that times 12 to get $60,000 a year. Multiply that times 20 to get $1.2 million. And that becomes what is called your number. That becomes your goal throughout your financial life. And every single time you consider an expenditure, you say, does this move me closer to my goal or does it move me away? And keep thinking like that and you'll be thinking like the most successful people in our society. Do I have enough money to live for 20 years? Now, most people are underwater. That's all right. That's just where you start. And we'll talk about how you get above water. Now, the key to wealth creation, the secret of wealth creation, has been the same throughout history. It is to add value. It's to add value. Sometimes I'll ask a business audience, how many people here are in sales? How many people here work on straight commission? And very few people raise their hand. And I'll say, the fact is that everyone works on commission. Everyone is rewarded by receiving a percent of the value that they create with their work. And people who don't know this are confused about their work. The greater results that you get, the more value that you add, the greater will be your commission. And this is a fact of life. So if you want to increase the amount of income you have, you've got to increase the value that you contribute to your company and to other people. Now, most people start with nothing at the beginning of their careers. Virtually all wealth in America is first generation. It's interesting. When I started off, I used to feel sorry for me. And self-pity, by the way, is a real killer. I used to feel sorry for myself because I didn't have any money. I didn't have any skills. I didn't have any education. And then I found out that most people who are successful start off with none of those things as well. But it's what they do afterwards that counts. Almost all wealth begins with the sale of personal services, with what is called sweat equity. That means instead of having financial equity, you put sweat into it. To achieve financial success, you must be continually seeking ways to add value to whatever it is you are doing. Now, here are the rules for success, and they've always been the same. Is number one is always put in more than you take out. Most people think, well, if they want me to work harder, they should pay me more. No, first you work harder, and then they will more than be willing to pay you more. Second of all, always do more than you're paid for. Always do more than you're paid for, and you'll always end up being paid more than you're getting today. And finally, the greatest of all success secrets, always go the extra mile. Always be looking for ways to put in far more. Always be looking for ways to go beyond what anybody else in your position would expect you to do, and that will put you on the side of the angels. Remember, there are never any traffic jams on the extra mile. So how do you add value? Number one is make a list of everything you do over the course of a week or a month at your job. Make a list of all the things that you do. It'll be 20 or 30 or 40 things. And then review this list and ask yourself, if I could only do one thing on this list all day long, which one activity would contribute the greatest value to my business or to my career? And almost always it'll pop out. There's always one thing that you do that has a greater financial impact than anything else you do for yourself or your business. Now, number three, once you've identified the one activity that contributes the most value to you and your business, ask the question again. If I could only do two things all day long, what would be the second item? And whatever it is, put a circle around it. And finally, once you've determined your top two tasks, or number four, once you've determined your, say that again. Number four, once you've determined your top two tasks, ask the question again. If I could only do three things all day long, what would be the third? Number five, in almost every case, your three key activities contribute 90% or more of all the value you bring to your work. I call this the law of three. There are three things you do that are more important to your success than everything else. Everything else is a support activity, a complementary activity, a useless activity, or a low-value, no-value activity. It's the big three that determine your future. The key to success is for you to spend more and more time on those top three tasks and dedicate yourself to getting better and better at each one of them. Now, 80% of self-made millionaires own their own businesses. Fully 90% of businesses started by people with business experiences eventually succeed. Fully 90% of businesses started with no business experience ultimately fail, at least in the short term. By the way, the average self-made millionaire has been broke two or three times, or nearly broke. So if you've been broke or lost a lot of money, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. Henry Ford went broke three times before he invented the automobile, became one of the richest men in the world. His going broke teaches you lessons you cannot learn any other way. And so the critical thing is not that you make mistakes or not. The critical thing is you learn from the mistakes. So resolve to start your own business today, even if it's only a sole proprietorship. The fastest way for you to achieve financial success is to start your own business. In fact, it's almost impossible to become successful with a job. The word job stands for J-O-B, which means just over broke. It's impossible for you to become successful, so start a business. Now, remember, if you build it, they will come. This is an incredible thing, but when you start your own business, you will create a force field of energy that will attract into your life opportunities to activate this business. Now, how do you start a business? Well, you can go onto the Internet and start a business for $25. There's all kinds of sites that will do it. You can start a sole proprietorship just by saying, I am now in business. You can start a business without anybody's permission. If you name it after yourself, you don't even have to register it. The only reason you incorporate or become an S-corporation is for tax benefits. But it's amazing how many businesses are started on a kitchen table. Princeton says, well, let's start a business. Okay, you can be in business today. You can print business cards this afternoon. You can be out buying and selling tomorrow. It's very easy to start a business. America is one of the easiest countries in the world to start a business, and it's designed that way so that people will start more businesses. Remember when Paul Allen and Bill Gates came up with this idea of designing a software program for a new computer company? They were students at Harvard, and they dropped out of Harvard, and they started their business. They called it Microsoft. And the business, of course, now has 120,000 employees, hundreds of billions of dollars of net worth, and so on. But it was two guys with an idea, 21 years old, riding cheap seats on a plane, said, let's start a business together. Both of them today are two of the, as you know, Bill Gates is the richest, and Paul Allen is one of the almost richest people in the world. Now, when you start a business, the very idea of starting a business creates this force field of energy, and you start to suddenly see ideas and opportunities to put your business into action. It's almost like getting a new car. You have this brand new car all ready to go. You start to think of places you can drive it. Now, the next point is you can form a sole proprietorship simply by naming it after yourself. As I said, if you want to start an S corporation, you can usually do this on the Internet at low cost. The advantage of a sole proprietorship or an S corporation is that everything you invest initially can be deducted against your current income as a legitimate business deduction in the current tax year. But there's more than that, and this is really important. The IRS allows you to deduct as much as $5,000 per year if you own your own business. Expenses that you normally pay for with after-tax dollars can be deducted as business expenses. Let me give an example. Let's say you start your own business, and that involves talking to people. Well, everywhere you go, there are people. So, therefore, wherever you drive, you can deduct your travel. Now, the IRS allows you to deduct 58.5 cents per mile for travel if you're doing it for a legitimate business purpose, and to speak to people is legitimate. Well, the average American drives 12 to 25,000 miles per year. That means that simply by starting your own business, you can deduct between $7,000 and $12,000 per year from your taxes from any other source just as a traveling cost. And there's a whole bunch of, there's about 50 other ways that you can take deductions when you have your own business. You can deduct part of your house. You can deduct part of your meals. You can deduct your travel on airplanes. You can deduct clothes. You can deduct subscriptions. You can deduct magazines and books. You can deduct so many things, courses that you go to for training. It's phenomenal. And so what happens if you're paying taxes at 30 or 40%, you're saving an enormous amount of money just simply by starting your own business. Also, you become a different person when you start your own business. So see yourself as the president of your own personal services corporation from now on. Someone asks you what you do, you say, I'm the president of my own business. President, really? I thought you worked for ABC Company. Yes, they're my best clients. But I'm the president of my own personal services corporation, and you are. It is a legal form of business, is a personal services corporation. Now, the key to starting a business is simple. You simply find, create, acquire, or offer a product or service at a price that allows you to make a profit. Now, one of the greatest fears in America that paralyzes people like a deer in the headlights is fear of rejection, combined with fear of failure. But fear of rejection is, what if I represent a product or service and somebody says no? Well, so what? Just talk to somebody else. What if they say no? The rule is, some will, some won't, so what, next. In other words, start off with any product or service that you think can be of value to people and start to offer it. People say, well, I'm not good at selling. Well, learn how. Can you ride a bicycle? Can you drive a car? You can learn how to sell. You can learn any business skill you need to learn. You can learn any sales skill you need to learn. They're all learnable skills. Do not allow yourself to be held back at a lower level of income simply because you lack a skill that is learnable. Every single person who can do anything well today at one time could not do it at all, and they just learned how. The question is not whether or not you can do it, but where and how do you learn it as quickly as possible. Now, once you learn a business or sales skill, you can do it over and over again. And this is the marvelous thing, is once you've mastered the skill, like riding a bicycle, you can ride it for the rest of your life, driving a car, typing with it to keyboard, cooking a recipe in the kitchen. I mean, once you've mastered the skill, you own the skill. It's just a learnable skill. Now, each time you use a business or money-making skill, you get better and better at it. And as you get better at it, you make fewer mistakes, and you get better results. It's just called the learning curve, and it's the reason why everybody who was successful is successful. At the beginning, it's very hard. As Goethe said, everything is hard before it's easy. But after you master it, it gets easier and easier and easier. The key qualities required to start and build your own business are courage, the courage to begin, and skill, the skill to operate intelligently. The rule is that you do the things you fear, and the courage comes afterwards. You perform in the skill area where you are weak, and skill and expertise will come afterwards. Many people say, well, as soon as I feel really confident, then I'll do it. As soon as I feel really good at what I'm doing, then I'll give it a try. No, is you just launch. You face the fear, and you do it anyway, and the courage comes afterwards. You say, oh, I'm not very good at this. We'll do it anyway. And you do it, and the skill comes afterwards. They always come after the action, not before. Einstein said, nothing happens until something moves. Nothing happens in your life until you move. Now, the key to success in business is for you to think through what you sell and who you sell it to. So, number one, who is your customer? Think about this very carefully. All market research is aimed at determining this, and if you're correct with who is your customer, you can be successful. If you're incorrect, you need to adjust. Second question is, why does he or she buy your product? Why does he or she buy it from you? Very important to think through. What are the reasons why people will buy your product? Point three is, what specific benefits does your customer seek in buying your product or service? Is it clear that your customer will receive these benefits? Interesting, if you ask, the number one reason why people don't buy something is because they're not clear how they would be better off if they did. That's the number one reason. And why aren't they clear? It's because the salesperson, the business owner like yourself, didn't make it clear. So fuzzy understanding is the major reason for sales failure. Clarity is the major reason why people buy things. So number four, ask, how does your product or service improve your customer's life or work? How does it improve their life or work? Because customers only buy improvement, and they must be clear how your product or service will improve their life or work. And here's a question number five. Why doesn't your customer, your ideal customer, buy from you? What holds him or her back? What are the reasons that people give for not buying your product or service, especially if they're qualified? Question six is, who are your competitors? Why does your customer buy from your competitor rather than from you? And here's one of the rules, is always respect your competitors. Never say, oh, the competitor's no good, the product's no good, and so on. Never attack a successful competitor. Instead, try to learn from that competitor. And number seven, one of the most important of all questions, is what is your unique selling proposition? What is your competitive advantage? What is your area of excellence, your area of superiority? What is it that your product or service offers that makes it better, superior, different from any other product or service in the market? And sometimes, by the way, it is because it is you who are offering it. Sometimes it is the person selling the product that makes the product or service unique. These are the keys to business success. So point seven is, dedicate 80% of your time and effort to selling, to new customer acquisition. I was listening to a successful person talk the other day, and I asked, what's your biggest problem in business? And she said, it's always marketing. Marketing and selling. It's always marketing and selling. I've got the product, I've got the service, I've got the business, but it's always marketing and selling. So what most people do in business is they avoid marketing and selling. They did a survey of business owners recently, and they said, how important are sales to your company? And they said, oh, very important, most important thing of all. And so then they tracked them for a couple of weeks to find out how they used their time. They spend only 11% of their time selling and marketing. The other 89% of their time was busy work. They were in meetings, and they were on telephone calls, and they were doing plans, and they were having discussions, and they were going out for lunch, and so on. Only 11% was spent on the lifeblood of the business, the oxygen to the brain. So spend 80% of your time focused on customer acquisition. Businesses succeed for one reason, high sales. Businesses fail for one reason, low sales. Now, in starting your business, number eight, start small and test each step carefully and grow slowly. Don't make the mistake I did when I started one of my businesses. I took every penny I had. I sold my house. I sold my car. I borrowed money. I put it into advertising. And I might as well have just burned it all in the parking lot. Because instead of going out and making sales calls and starting off small, I decided to advertise in the newspaper, radio, television, and billboards. And I kept doing that until all my money was gone. And then I picked up my briefcase and I started to make phone calls and went out and sold again. So go slowly. Test each step carefully as you go along. Keep accurate records of all your transactions. Know where your money comes from and know where it goes. Now, two more points are, first of all, always focus on net profits, not gross sales volume. Always think in terms of what is your profit margin. How much do you actually earn on a sale after all expenses have been deducted? And one of the most important things to deduct is your hourly rate. If you're a $50,000 a year person, that means your hourly rate is $25. When you calculate your sales profit per product or service, always deduct the number of hours of your own personal time you have to invest to get a true picture of the profit. Always focus on positive cash flow. Positive cash flow, or free cash flow, is the lifeblood of your business. The most important number that your bank looks at, that your landlord looks at, that the grocery store looks at, is free cash flow. How much net positive cash flow do you generate? Because that is the measure of success, and that is the key to success. The first rule for success in business is don't lose money. The second rule is, whenever in doubt, go back to rule number one. Don't lose money. Be very careful with your money in business. The most important thing you can do in business is to focus all your time and energy on generating sales. Now, let's talk about stock market investing for a second. We're looking at the stock market today. As you know, lots of people have made millions of dollars in the stock market. And in the last few weeks, a lot of people have lost millions and billions of dollars. But here's the rule. Self-made millionaires do not make their money in the stock market. People think, well, you ask a self-made millionaire, what do you think about the market? They just roll their eyes at you. They don't invest money in the stock market. They invest money in themselves and in their businesses and in hard assets. 80% of stock market experts with many years of experience are unable to beat the stock market averages over time. Now, this is important to understand. If the most brilliant brains in the market cannot beat the averages, and for an individual to try to beat the averages is a joke. Self-made millionaires store money in the stock market temporarily, usually in safe, stable, value stocks. They find a financial advisor who is conservative and prudent, who practices rule number one, don't lose money. And if you are going to lose money, do everything possible to lose less than anyone else. And the way you do that is they invest money in unexciting stocks, like Warren Buffett buys Coca-Cola and Geico and furniture stores. He buys things that are solid and stable, that have regular sales in good times and bad. You should do the same thing. His self-made millionaires spend an average of 6 minutes per day checking on their investments. Non-self-made millionaires are on the computer all day long looking at their stock. Self-made millionaires sometimes don't look at it for weeks or months at a time. I work with some financial advisors who work with wealthy people. And I said, how often do your people check their portfolios? I say once every 6 months. Once every 6 months, yes, they just allow us to carefully allocate their funds for minimum loss, highest possible returns within those safeguards, and they look at them once every 6 months. Warren Buffett wrote recently, and when he was sitting on $27 billion in assets, that there's nothing worth buying in the stock market today. Now, recently, Warren has made a couple of bets, but generally speaking, he's sitting on tens of billions of dollars and not buying anything because he just doesn't think there's anything out there worth buying. So trading stocks, remember, does not add value. People think that you can make money by trading stocks. No, there's no increase in value. You're not making a contribution to your world. The only way that you can acquire and achieve great wealth is by adding value in some way. Always think is, what can I do to add value? One of the reasons, by the way, that we have all these problems today is so many people thought that they could make money by not adding any value. They could buy and flip a house or a condominium. They could get in and out of something. They could make money quick and easy without doing any work, without contributing any value. And it's all over now. Arthur Laffer, who did the Laffer Curve, and one of the most prominent economists in the U.S., has just written a book called The End of Prosperity. Basically, what he's written about is the end of easy money. From now on, for us to make a lot of money, we're going to have to work hard. So if you're going to invest in the stock market, the best of all investments is what is called an index fund. Now, these funds track the stock market. They outperform almost all mutual funds, and they have the lowest cost of acquisition and sales. An index fund just tracks the market, and it's very hard to beat an index fund. The index fund outperform some of the finest and best managed funds by the finest financial brains in the world. So let's talk about real estate investing now. Real estate investing has got real possibilities if you want to become wealthy, especially in turbulent times. The ownership of income-producing real estate is a major source of wealth in America. Now, it's not always a source of wealth because you have to follow a whole bunch of laws and regulations, and you have to be careful like any other business. But you'll find that some of the wealthiest people in America own lots of land. And we're talking about income-producing real estate that produces an income greater than the cost of carrying the property. And then over time, the property increases in value, the rents and returns increase in value, and people become wealthy. Give you an interesting point, by the way. I've invested in real estate, and I know several other people who are wealthy in real estate. And they say it took 5 to 10 years for a good, solid, well-chosen piece of property to finally become a real moneymaker. It takes a while. You have to be patient. I was talking to a multimillionaire the other day. He said, best property he ever had is one he's owned 25 years. It makes more money today than it's ever made in all of its history. It's a shopping center property. He said when he bought it, he was about break even. But over time, you pay down the mortgage, you increase the rents, you take care of the expenses, and it starts to earn more and more and more. So the rule with real estate investing is get rich slow. Don't ever look for a way to get rich quickly in real estate. Now, it's possible to buy real estate with no money down, but you require what is called a motivated buyer. Remember that expression, a motivated buyer. This is someone who's anxious to sell and who has no real idea what their property is worth. Sometimes real estate experts on the subject of no money down investing will tell you that you have to look at 100 properties before you can find 10 on which you can make an offer. Of the 10, you may be able to purchase one property. It therefore requires several weeks and even months of hard work to find a home that you can buy for no money down. But even if you can buy a home with no money down, and they don't tell you this, you still have to pay the bank fees, the mortgage fees, points to get both of them, the closing fees, the legal fees, the title fees, and a variety of other hidden expenses. Sometimes you have to, once you own a home for no money down, you have to pay all the, excuse me, I've been on and off airplane support 3 weeks now, and my voice is just about gone. Then I got up this morning and swam 100 laps in the pool, so hold on. Well, I take a lozenge and then continue. Thank you for your patience. Bear with me here. Okay, I think we're back again here. Thank you very much for your patience. Now, once you own a house for no money down, you have to pay all the upfront cash costs of upgrading, renovating, landscaping, repairs, and even advertising to find a tenant. If you don't find a tenant immediately, you must pay the monthly operating and mortgage costs out of your own pocket until you do. And by the way, all of these additional expenses have to be paid in cash. There's no credit. You can't add them onto the mortgage. You can't do anything. So you must realize that there's an enormous amount, thousands of dollars involved in buying a home with no money down. Now, one of the best methods to start in real estate is called buy 'em, fix 'em. Many people have made millions of dollars this way. This consists of finding a home that is run down, buying the home at a below market price, moving in or fixing up the home on your evenings and weekends, and then either renting it out or selling it and making a profit. Buy them, fix them. The first time you buy and fix a house will take several months, even a year. The second time you do this will take less time. After 2 or 3 years of experience, you can be buying, fixing up, repairing, and reselling 4 to 6 homes per year, making a profit each time at little or no risk. Now, I was giving a seminar for a Fortune 500 company, and a husband and wife who both work for this company, they make about $50,000 to $75,000 each, came up and told me their story. They said they got into this buy them, fix them idea. They went to a seminar, they got some books, and they went out and took them 6 months to find a house that fitted their parameters. It took them about 2 or 3 months to fix up the house, to repair it, to paint it, to put in new carpets, clean up the landscaping, and so on. And then they resold the house, and they made about $50,000. Then they started to do it the second time. It took them about 4 months to find the second house, 2 months to find the third house, 1 month to find the fourth house, and so on. And what happened was pretty soon they found themselves fixing a house up every 2 to 3 months and making $30,000 to $50,000 per house and rolling that money forward into another house or houses. They said, we're now making about $200,000 to $250,000 a year net with all the depreciation that's involved. We'll be millionaires in less than 5 years. And if we keep on doing this, we'll be multimillionaires by the time we retire. And they didn't even quit their day jobs. And they didn't even really interfere with their lifestyle. And the more often they did it, the more familiar they became with bankers and with builders and contractors and construction people and landscapers. So they knew the right people to use. And they just developed this little sub-business, and that couple will become millionaires and multimillionaires in the fullness of time. Now, you add value to real estate by making it more attractive so that you can rent the property at a higher price, thereby increasing its market value. The key to success in real estate is for you to think long-term. Never buy a piece of property with the idea that you're going to flip it quickly and make a quick profit. By the way, almost everybody who got into that is now bankrupt today. Remember, they were buying 5 or 10 houses, sight unseen, 5 or 10 condos, sight unseen. They're all bankrupt, and they're all set back, and it may take them 10 years to recover from this buy 'em, flip 'em sort of attitude. Don't do that. Always think about owning a piece of property for 5 or 10 years before you buy it in the first place. Now, the key to success in real estate is simple. Learn every detail about the property. Learn about the city. Learn about the neighborhood. Learn about the local economy. Learn about the local school, shopping centers, and roads. Become intimately familiar with the property before you buy it because it is an enormous investment. Imagine somebody was going to sell you their business. If you're going to buy a business from someone, you would want to look at every single detail of the business. Well, it can cost you more to buy a home than it could cost you to buy a business, and you want to know every single detail about the home. And always look for the what I call the fatal flaw, the hidden flaw. Whatever somebody tells you, they're always leaving something out. They're always leaving something out. So, how do you become financially independent? The simplest way for you to become financially independent is to develop the habit of saving 10 to 20% of your income throughout your lifetime. In our instant gratification society, people don't like that. And today we have a savings rate of almost zero. Everybody is spending everything they make and a little bit more besides. So if you're already starting off in debt, and most people are, and you can't save 10 or 20% of your income, begin by saving 1% of your income and living on the other 99%. Now, that's not hard to do. Let's say you make $3,000 a month. Then you start to save $1 a day, $30 a month. Now, you can do that. You can find a way to save $1 a day. If all you do is you put all your change into a jar when you come home in the evening, and just put that money away, $1 a day will start to change the direction of your life, like changing the direction of a great ocean liner 1 degree at a time. Once you become comfortable living on 99% of your income, increase your savings rate to 2% of your income, then 3%, 5%, and eventually 10%. Now, human beings are creatures of habit. We become accustomed to our income. If we begin to live on 99%, we begin to adjust down, like gearing down a car. We begin to adjust down to that, and we become comfortable fairly quickly. Each time you gear down and live on a smaller percentage of your income, you quickly adapt to it. You adjust to it, and it becomes comfortable. Then you can go to the next percentage. Within a year or so, you will be living quite comfortably on 80% to 90% of your income and saving and investing the balance. If you do this throughout your working lifetime, you'll become a millionaire. Do you know that a person who saves $100 a month and puts it into a good mutual fund or index fund and does that from age 20 to age 65 will be a millionaire? They'll be worth more than $1 million saving $100 a month. How many people, if I said, I'll guarantee to give you $1 million back if you'll just save $100 a month, how many people would say no? Well, you can guarantee yourself, and you can be your own guarantee by saving $100 a month. If you're in your 30s, you have to save $220 a month. If you're in your 40s, you have to save $450 a month. But whatever it is, you've got to figure it out. What is your number, the number you want to hit so you can retire, and how much do you have to save every month and let it grow by compound interest? Einstein also said compound interest is the most powerful force in the universe. And so when you start to use compound interest, the difference is absolutely extraordinary in your life. Now, self-made millionaires develop the habit of living within their means. The key to financial success is contained in five words. Spend less than you earn. Spend less than you earn and save and invest the balance. If you can discipline yourself to do that, you can change your life. As W. Clement Stone once said, if you cannot save money, the seeds of greatness are not in you. The very most successful companies are the companies that build reserves during the growth times so that they are ready when business goes soft. The very smartest people are people who develop reserves throughout their lives so that they have money put aside when things go soft. Now, here's five don'ts for financial success. Number one is don't seek easy money or get led astray by get-rich-quick schemes and ideas. You know the old saying, when a man with money meets a man with experience, the man with experience is going to end up with the money, and the man with the money is going to end up with the experience. So don't believe people who tell you you can make money quickly and easily, because it's simply not true. Number two, don't look for rewards without working or for shortcuts to financial success. Don't expect them. Don't look for them. If somebody offers them to you, run away. Number three, don't expect someone else to do it for you. You are responsible. Number four is don't trust the luck or hope for miracles. They never occur in financial matters. And number five, don't expect to be successful the first time. You'll make hundreds of little mistakes on the way to developing the wisdom and experience you need to get and keep the financial fortune you desire. Expect to make lots and lots of mistakes on the way through. Just be sure that you learn from them. Now, here's five do's for financial success. Number one, do study and understand every aspect of any investment you ever make for the rest of your life. If you don't understand it, don't put your money into it. Number two, continually look for ways to add and increase value in some way in every situation. Number three, do be prepared to get rich slowly. All serious money is long-term, patient money. And number four, do be frugal with your money at all times. Be careful and thoughtful with how you invest it and how you spend it. Continually watch your money like a hawk. And number five, do resolve today to get your savings rate up to 10 to 20% of your income for the rest of your life. And then invest the money carefully. Don't lose money. Remember, all money-making skills are learnable. You can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself. Everyone who is wealthy today started off poor by studying what other financially successful people have done in the past, and by doing the same things over and over, you will eventually get the same results. You will eventually achieve the financial independence you desire. Now, by the way, we're going to be replaying this teleseminar today at 1 p.m. and October 29th at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. So, if you would like to hear the seminar again, or you know someone else who would like to hear this teleseminar, please have them call and register. Now we're going to open up the lines for questions and answers. To ask a question, hit star zero to be put into the queue.
One moment for questions, please.
In immediate times, I know they're all saying they're FDIC, but is it safe to keep our money in the bank right now?
Okay, please repeat the question so I hear it's in its entirety.
Should we be at all worried about our money being in the banks right now, whether it's simple savings or checking, or you think it's going to come to pass, meaning that we should leave any amounts of money, large sums of money in the bank? Is it okay?
It's okay for amounts up to $250,000. They've been now guaranteed by the federal government, so they're quite safe. It used to be $100,000, now it's $250,000. If you want to be super safe, you can take and put, if you have more than $250,000, you can spread it over several banks. I personally have more than that, but I have it all in Wells Fargo Bank. And the reason I have it in Wells Fargo is Wells Fargo has stepped aside from the subprime mortgage lending and is one of the solidest banks in the United States. So there's very little danger of losing your money in Wells Fargo. But if you are concerned, remember, you're insured up to $250,000 by the federal government. So even if the bank went broke, it wouldn't hurt you.
Next question comes from Carrie. Carrie, please state your question.
Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Brian. You were talking about a lot about selling and owning your own business. And what do you think about direct sales companies?
I think that they're a wonderful way to get started in business. And I've written about this extensively. I'm involved in a direct sales company. You're talking about multi-level or network marketing?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. They're a wonderful way because they enable you to start with very little risk and just sweat equity. So if you have a good product that people use and reuse and it's backed by a solid company and you're working with people that you like, and you feel that people can benefit from the product or service, then it's a wonderful way. I've had so many experiences now. I've spoken with almost all the companies, and I've met people who've literally gone from rags to riches offering a valuable service through a direct marketing company. So it's a wonderful way to get started.
Okay, that's great.
Thank you. So
thank
good
you.
Good luck to you.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Brian?
Yes.
This is Chelsea from the office. I just wanted to interrupt for a second and let you know that we forgot to tell everyone where to go to get the 12 steps to becoming a millionaire.
Right, and you didn't tell me that on my material. So the link to get to 12 steps to become a millionaire, well, this is the link. It's www.briantracy.com/milliondollarhabits. Is that the link?
Yep, that's it.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sorry I forgot to mention it, Chelsea. It wasn't clear to me. So if anybody on this line wants to learn the million-dollar habits that enable you to double and triple your income, go to www.briantracy.com/million-dollar-habits, one word. This is one of the most popular money-making programs in the world today in multiple languages. It has sold hundreds of thousands of programs, and many people have come up to me and told me it took them from rags to riches. It shows you how to develop the habits of self-made millionaires, how to think, walk, talk, act, and deal with the world the way self-made millionaires do, based on 25 years of detailed research into the habits and behaviors of people who started with nothing and made $1 million in one generation. So if you're really interested in that, by all means, go to www.briantracy.com/million-dollar-habits. And, of course, everything we sell is unconditionally guaranteed for a year. So when you get the program, and I can't even tell you how low the price is because I'm embarrassed by it, but when you get the program, you can take it for a year. Try it out. If you're not happy for any reason at all, you can give it back and there's no charge. So by all means, if you are really serious about becoming wealthy, this is one of the greatest programs ever done on the subject. How was that, Chelsea?
That was perfect, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Yes, our next question comes from Paul. Paul, please state your question.
Brian, good afternoon. Early in the presentation, you had talked about analyzing a residential property as regarding value, 15 times annual rent rate. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, there are rules of thumb in the industry, and this is an index that's used nationwide. If you take a home, the rule is that a person should be able to pay for the house with 30% of their income. So let's say you have a house that rents for $1,000 a month. Well, 30%, that would mean that a person would have to be making about $40,000 a year to rent that house. The problem with houses when they get up to, and what would that house be worth at 12 times 15? Just to work it out quickly here, I should have figured it out before. It's that'd be a $180,000 house. So therefore, if it rents for $1,000 a month, it would be worth $180,000. And to buy that house, a person should be able to put down a down payment of 20%. Now, of course, in the last few years, that's gone soft, which is why we have the disaster that we have. But they should be able to put down 10 to 20%, and they should be able to pay the mortgage on that house with 30% of their income. So just use that as a rule of thumb. If a person says, here's my house, and I want $200,000 for it, how much can you rent it for? Well, for $200,000, 15 times, da-da-da, you have to rent it for about $1,200 a month. Are you with me so far?
Yeah, and that's how you would analyze it in terms of an investor property versus owner-occupant?
Yes. If you're going to buy it yourself, always think of a property in terms of selling it. The rule is you make money when you buy, not when you sell in real estate. You make money by buying well, not by selling well. So always look at a property through the eyes of the person who's going to buy it from you. And imagine the person who's going to buy it from you is a very sharp person. And they're very knowledgeable and thoughtful about this as an investment. Now, if you're rich and you want to buy a house, expensive homes, by the way, can never rent for those amounts. I was on an airplane recently. It's an important point. I'm sitting next to the gentleman. We're talking first class coming into San Diego. He owns a very large business, a multi-million dollar business. I said, where do you live? And he said, neighborhood not far from Rancho Santa Fe. I said, oh. He said, we're renting. This is about 2 years ago. I said, we're renting. He said, yeah. He said, these prices don't make any sense, so I sold my house. I got a fantastic amount for it. He said, we're just going to rent until the house prices go back down again. It's much cheaper for us to rent. We can rent a fabulous house, equally as good as the house we had, and we've made all of that. So he made about $2 or $3 million by selling his house, and now he can walk back into the market and rebuy it. So he's a very wealthy man who realized that the price rental ratios were so distorted, out of shape, that it made sense for him to sell his home and rent. So always look at a house through the eyes of the person you want to sell it to later, and you'll probably make a much better decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Yes, our next question comes from John. John, please state your question.
Yeah, Brian, you talked a lot about building a business, and
yes.
In the 21st century, can you build a business cold calling on the phone with do not call and door-to-door, and if so, give me a couple ideas.
Well, of course you can, because they're starting 2 million new businesses a year, and you just have to be more artistic in the way you sell. One of the things that we have found is that an enormous number of people are now using the Internet to sell, and there are opt-in lists that you can use. There are all kinds of ways to use the Internet. We teach it and preach it and use it. We built our Internet business from $1,200 a month to about $120,000 a month, and we've even hit $180,000, $190,000 a month in sales simply by using marketing techniques that have been perfected for the Internet. You can also use all kinds of other advertising plus direct sales. So there's all kinds of ways. They are limited only by your imagination. And if they weren't, then you wouldn't have so many new businesses being formed and so many large businesses doing such large volumes in sales. But the critical thing is just to get started. Find a product or service. My rule has always been, when in doubt, sell yourself out. So whenever I've started a business, my first thought is pick up the phone or go and make calls on people and go and get face-to-face. My good friend of mine is a sales expert, said the key to your success in business will be the number of face-to-face appointments you have with prospective customers. And if you focus like a laser beam just on that number, the number of face-to-face or ear-to-ear appointments you have with prospective customers, you can make a success of almost any business.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Stacy. Stacy, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Stacy.
During the teleseminar, you mentioned that to increase your wealth, you want to add value. And I've heard that before. Can you give us any tips on how we could add value to our clients?
Well, they're limited only by your own imagination. One of the things that I recommend you do, and this has made more people rich than any other creative thinking idea in history. Take a piece of paper, at the top of the page, write the question, is how can I add more value to each of my customers or clients? Question mark. And then write down every idea you can think of. And you could call them faster. You could confirm with them by email. You could include a bonus gift. You could send them a regular newsletter. You could visit them personally. You could call them and thank them for the business. You could send them a thank you card. You should start writing down every idea you can think of. And here's the important point is almost every idea is a customer contact. It's a touch. It's emotional. It's not spending money by sending them gifts and things like that. It's calling them, visiting them, seeing them, sending them a card, sending them an email, doing something that is kind, helpful, generous, that is expresses your appreciation of them, and so on. So when you start to write and force yourself to write 20 ideas to the answer to the question, what are 20 different ways that I can increase my perceived value to my customer so that I can help my customer, that I can improve my customer's life or work? And you will be amazed at the number of ideas you come up with. And then pick at least one idea and take action on it immediately.
Thank you. That's great.
Yeah, and it's a fabulous way. It's a way that we've used over and over again. And remember, whatever method you come up with, somebody's going to copy. If it's a good idea, somebody will copy it, and you have to be ready with your next idea. And just keep raising the bar. Keep raising the standard. Keep adding more services. And remember, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You just have to spend a lot of thought.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from James. James, please state your question.
Hello, James.
The president candidate to vote for, and I wanted to know your thoughts on all of that.
Well, in America today, this is a very controversial subject. Who is the best presidential candidate to vote for? Well, I've studied economics and politics for 30 years. I'm in Washington almost every month. I know a lot of what is going on out there, and I'm sending out a blog, by the way, which contains a Wall Street Journal article that sort of basically explains what is at stake in the election. The blog will be going out next week, and you can get it from my website, Brian Tracy, at briantracy.com. Here's the point. An economy is successful to the degree to which it encourages new businesses, period. I've studied 2,000 years of economic history. And every single country is successful to the degree to which it encourages new business formation. There is a study done by the United Nations called Doing Business. It's done by the World Bank. Doing Business evaluates how easy it is to start a business in any country. Every country where it's easy to start a business is prosperous. Every country where it's more difficult is less prosperous. Now, what makes it easy is lack of regulations and low taxes that encourage entrepreneurship. What makes it hard is more regulations and high taxes. So in this election, we have a situation where one candidate is offering basically money for nothing. And you would vote for this candidate, and you're going to get free education, and you're going to get free health care, and you're going to get free benefits, and you're going to get checks from the government, and you're going to get money, 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 free, 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 and tax cuts, and so on. And the only people that will have to pay are those awful rich people. Well, this form of class warfare has never worked. Doesn't work in America, and it's destroyed every society. Look at Russia during the communist days. Their whole thought there was, we can create prosperity by taxing the rich. And what they did is they created 70 years of impoverishment. So that's the major issue, is which candidate will allow you to keep more of your money so you can invest it in your own business. Now, I would be considered one of the rich. And so the question is, what do I do with the money that I make? And you know what I and every other rich person does? We reinvest it. And you know how we reinvest it? We start new businesses and we hire more people. And you know how we have to hire more people? We have to pay them more money to get them away from where they're already working. We have to increase wages and we have to increase benefits and we have to make it more attractive. And you know who earns money the last in our society? It's the business person. If the business person makes the right decision, takes the right risk, starts the business, invests in the facilities, produces the product or service, sells it, hires the people and everything else, at the end of the day, if there's anything left over, the rich get a profit. But up to that time, and they have to spend at least 90 cents in investment to get 10 cents worth of profit. Up until that time, the rich person gets nothing. So remember this, only businesses can create jobs. Only businesses can create wealth. The government has no money of its own. Anything the government spends, it has to first tax away from people who are working, and ultimately has to tax it away from the working man. Because if I have to close my business or shut my business down because of high taxes, the very first thing that goes are my lowest paid people, as I have to lay people off if I want to stay alive. So what happens when you start to tax the rich is you create unemployment for the average working person. So vote for the person that allows you to keep more of your money, because you know how to spend your own money better than the government does, on your family and on your business and on your life. That's the basic thing. So I won't mention either of the candidates. Just make your decision based on that.
Thank you, Brian.
You knew what I was going to say anyway, didn't you?
Yeah.
Vote with your head, not your emotions. Your brain, for heaven's sakes.
I think that's the way I'm living my life right now. It's just emotional. And it's not just about what's going on with the economy. I've been like that as long as I can remember, and I'm trying to overcome that. And I have listened to you for a long time. I have a lot of your programs, and I just need to put it to work.
Yes, you do. And, you know, one of the very best ways to do is think on paper. It's just to write things down. It's amazing. When you start to write things down, they become far more clear to you, and they become unemotional. And it enables you to make much better decisions. One of the great success secrets, which I learned in my 20s, was think on paper. Always think on paper. All successful people write things down. Unsuccessful people have all these things whirling around in their mind, which makes it very hard for them to make good decisions.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Bernie. Bernie, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Thanks. I've got two quick questions. What kind of recommendations would you make for people, saving principles for people in their 50s and 60s? And the other is on the marketing issue about spending 80% of time in marketing. Would you say that a person who provides services, you know, lawyer, psychologist, doctor, et cetera, should also provide that much, or should it be a little different from those who provide products?
Well, it depends upon how busy you are. I say spend 80% of your time marketing and developing business until you are so busy you can no longer service all your customers. And resist the temptation to get involved, to get all tied up with busy work. So that's why I say with a new business, the critical thing is selling. And within selling, there are three key tasks: prospecting and making appointments with new prospects, new people who can buy from you, presenting, showing the prospect that your services are the best choice, all things considered, and then closing, getting them to make a decision to use your services. And if those are the three things that account for 90% of your positive cash flow, and you must discipline yourself to do everything else in non-work hours. During work hours, when clients or customers are available to be seen, you should be spending all of your time developing business. Now, people who start service firms almost always start a service firm because they have an idea for a service that they feel they can deliver in a superior way, and also they are rainmakers. They have the ability to work well with clients. As your business grows, it takes very little to service clients compared to developing new clients. So if you start your business because you're a rainmaker, don't stop being a rainmaker. Don't say, well, now my business is successful, so I'm going to hire somebody to sell for me. No. Some of the most powerful executives in the world spend all of their time developing new business. And then they hire really competent people who can then deliver on that business. So until you are overwhelmed with business, till you're making so much money you're throwing up, concentrate your efforts on marketing and sales.
Okay, thank you very much. And also for the people who are 50s and 60s, any special?
Yes. A great tragedy has occurred in that people have stopped saving. And so what you have to do is, if you're in your 50s and 60s, you have to first of all determine your number. How much will I need to support my lifestyle if I retire for 20 years? And let's say it's $5,000 a month. That means for 20 years you'd need 5,000 times 240. You'd need $1.2 million. All right? Then you calculate, how much am I worth today? And how far am I from where I want to be? How much will I have to save each year in order to get there conservatively? How can I cut back on my expenditures so I can increase that number? How can I increase my income by a second income opportunity, a second business, and so on? Is you've got to start thinking very intelligently about retirement. You don't want to be hit by the fact that most 50% of baby boomers are looking at working to 70 and beyond. Why is that? It's because they don't have enough money. Unless they want to live a really low level of income, they don't have enough money because they kept putting it off. They kept thinking they would live forever, and suddenly at age 55 or 60, it hits them that they're a mile from their number. So first of all, learn your number. Second of all, make a plan to get to that number. Third of all, cut your costs. Do whatever it takes. Keep focused on the number. You don't want to be worried about that number when you're 70. You've still got some running room. Now here's one other good point, is that 55 is the new 65. Is that there's a website that you can go on right now. It's called realage.com. It's free. Go on to realage.com, and you can fill in all of your lifespan, lifestyle parameters, and they'll tell you what your real age is. And if you're living a healthy life, your real age is probably 10 years younger than your chronological age. So if you're 65 years old, you still have the health and vitality of a 55-year-old and maybe even younger, which is good, which means that you can work longer and with no ill effects. In fact, many people who are already well off are planning to work longer because it keeps them alive and vibrant and involved. It keeps their minds active. It keeps them physically active. There's lots of evidence to show that you will live much longer if you stay active than if you retire. So therefore, if you are 60, 65, remember, you've probably got another 10 or 15 good, productive years to work if you choose to, if you take good care of yourself.
Thanks again, Brian, for some great answers.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Ash. Ash, please state your question.
Yes, Brian. I heard about your formula for the rental properties, but for commercial properties, what's the formula?
Well, a commercial property, the number that they look at is about 7%. Is what you want is a commercial property should yield 7% net profit after all expenses. Some professional investors look for 7% on their cash, net cash flow. So if you buy a $1 million property for $200,000 down, you should be getting 7% on your investment of $200,000. That would be $14,000, $15,000 a year net cash flow. If you can do that, that's a good solid piece of property. And I have some very good friends in real estate who started with nothing, who are very wealthy today, and they just keep looking at properties until they find one who can give them that kind of a yield. And they won't buy it unless it does. In 1031 exchanges, where people are looking for a property to buy after they have sold another property so they don't have to pay capital gains, the number they look for nationwide is 7%. And so if you get more than 7%, great. But if it's less than 7%, it becomes more and more marginal, unless you can see ways to upgrade the property and increase the rents so that you will get your 7%. So use that as a rule of thumb, and then look at every single number that's involved. And remember, some numbers are understated, and some numbers are not even mentioned in the financial statements. So when you look at a piece of property, do your due diligence. Look at it very carefully. Even hire an expert in real estate to go through and look at things very carefully. Look at the leases that your tenants have to find out exactly what common area expenses they're required to pay. Take nothing on faith. Remember that a person trying to sell a property is never going to give you all the information that you need, and you must prepare it out yourself. But your goal must be to be absolutely confident that you can get 7% or more net cash flow on your investment.
Perfect. And do you think the commercial property is going to come down in value since residential has already done it? Commercial hasn't in this area.
There's a lot of stuff in Wall Street Journal about commercial properties, more and more vacancies, more and more companies cutting back, not renewing their leases, and so on. So it depends on many things. If a commercial property is rented out fully and at good rates, competitive rates, then people aren't going to leave that space. And if they do, you can replace them quite quickly because many companies are looking for less expensive property. The other thing is if the market that you're in is strong, then there's not going to be a reduction in commercial property values because businesses will not be cutting back. If the market you're in is weak, if there's unemployment is growing and business activity is declining, like in California, then there's danger in commercial property. So you have to build that into the price. You have to say, okay, it's got a 6% vacancy rate now, but according to statistics, it'll be at 12%. I have to be able to get my 7%, even if it has 12% vacancies. So it'll be real hard-nosed when it comes to looking at property.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Louise. Louise, please state your question.
Hello.
Hello, Louise.
Hello. Hi. I'm so sorry. I missed almost three quarters of this seminar, but and I just want to ask, despite what's happening in the economy, so I'm calling from the UK, you probably can tell by my accent, but despite what's happening in the economy, should we be sort of like worried about sort of what's going on? I'm a university student, and, you know, it's just the news is so bleak these days, and I just think, oh, gosh, you know, is that sort of hopeful sort of a recovery or something?
Well, first of all, I started off talking about the fact that there have been panics and crashes for the last 150 years, and this is another one of them. And it's bad, but the panic of 1907 was worse. The panic of 1929 was worse. What I would recommend, and I say just stay calm, is just be reasonable, be thoughtful, and recognize that some of the best minds in the world are looking for ways to turn this around. And some of the best business brains that have ever existed are producing new products and services and starting new businesses and so on. So just be calm, relax, and think long term. The best economists that I've read, and I keep current, predict that the market will recover, stabilize, and begin to turn up in the first or second quarter of 2009. And that's quite normal. It takes about, as I said, about 6 to 16 months for a recession like this to work its way through, like a pig in the python, economy. And in the first or second quarter of 2009, things will stabilize. Real estate prices are already stabilizing, and home sales are up. Why? It's because prices have now gone down to the price what they should have been, and people are now re-entering the market, confident that if they buy a home, it's not going to go down in value. And so just hang loose. It'll be fine. We're still living in one of the most prosperous times in all of human history, and it's going to get better in the years ahead. We're just going through a blip today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Louisa.
Thank you.
And we'll be sending you a copy of the CD for the teleseminar if you're enrolled for it, and the notes just go with it as well.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Brandon. Brandon, please state your question.
Hello, Brian. First point, very impressive numbers on what you've done with your website. So are you planning on releasing or have you released a program on internet marketing or teleseminars or on teleseminar? And then second, in starting your own business, if you choose a franchise, what are just a few things you'd want to look for and look out for in terms of selection and financing?
Well, number one, please send us an email with regard to information on internet business. It's something we're very involved in. You might talk about learning everything you can. Well, we are literally full-time students of the internet, and we know lots of good stuff, and we work with people who are experts who make us look like children, and we'll direct you to them for their expertise on how to build a more successful internet business. So just send us an email. Say, it's Brandon. I was on the teleseminar. Could I get some information? And we'll pass it on. The second thing with regard to franchises, a franchise business is a proven business model. The critical thing is to make sure that it's proven and successful. The way that you do that is you study it very carefully, and most people don't, and you talk to at least half a dozen owners of the franchise already, and you ask them the question, would you buy this franchise again? What are the strengths and weaknesses of owning this franchise? Would you buy it again? What advice would you give me? And every franchise vendor is required to provide you the names of the other franchise owners. And it is a very normal and natural thing for you to call them and ask for their input. And that will give you the very best idea of a franchise. The critical thing about a franchise, Brandon, remember this, is to be successful in business, you must sell something you like. You must sell something you think is neat. You must sell something that you think is something that people would really benefit from. You must sell something that you would consume yourself. You like it that much. You'd sell it to your mother. You'd sell it to your father. Never, never, never go into a business because you think, I wouldn't use this, but it's profitable if somebody else does. Always start with yourself and say, does this grab me? Is this something I like to do? I like to talk about it. I like to think about it. I like to do it all day long. I like to tell my friends about it. That's the starting point, and then you do your due diligence. Then you talk to other franchise owners and get their opinions.
Awesome.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, two more questions. And then we'll get back to work.
Our next question comes from James. James, please state your question.
Hi there, Brian. My name is James. I'm calling from Europe. You mentioned earlier on about the power of thought. Everything starts from a thought.
Yes.
One of the things I find is that when I go in for a project or a business or whatever, there are sometimes unconscious beliefs that will try and sort of hold me back. It could be resistance or... So the question to you is, how do you get to the under the surface sometimes and deal with limited beliefs?
Well, I have a program, James, called The Psychology of Achievement. It's the best-selling program dealing with this in the world in 27 languages. And it explains to you where your beliefs come from, how they're shaped and formed, and how you can alter them, almost like how you can stick your hands into the machine and rewire yourself. And more people's lives have been profoundly changed by psychology of achievement than any other program of its kind in history, all over the world in every culture. So I'm going to urge you to get the program. It's on CD, and listen to it. With everything we say, it's guaranteed for a year. But that will answer your questions in a very efficient way, and it will give you specific things that you can do to dramatically build your self-confidence very rapidly and your effectiveness in dealing with people. So get Psychology of Achievement. Just go back to the website, pick it up, and we'll send it to you. And I think you'll really enjoy it. It's a real life change.
Thank you. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. You're welcome. One more question.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Oh, wonderful. Well, for those of you who are still on, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Remember that this too shall pass and that this economy will change, and your job is to stay calm, stay focused, be reasonable, don't look for get-rich-quick schemes, be thoughtful with regard to your money, make provision against the downturn that still may come, and plan for the long-term future. And you will be a big success, and you will be a self-made millionaire, and I hope I see you at my seminars as I travel around. Good luck to all of you. Thank you.